On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than 20 bucks a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. For April, join us as we salute some of our favorite mystery solvers with items from Stranger Things, Batman, The X-Files, and Marvel's Jessica Jones. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate, including signed copies of Jessica Jones, Alias, Volumes 1 through 4. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw to save $3 off any new subscription today. What's up, everyone? Welcome back into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and it is Wednesday, April 26th. That's right, one day left until the draft kicks off, and I don't know whether to be sad or happy. I've been having so much fun here with you and Greg Gabriel previewing all the upcoming festivities, and at the same time, I'm not sure what there is left to report or how many more smoke screens I can deal with or red flags popping up with top prospects at the last second. So at this point, I guess the draft would just as soon arrive and we could get to assigning grades instantly, as if that makes any sense, you know, right after the fact. So I'm kidding, of course, but it has been a fun process, and I thank you guys for being with us as I do each week at the top of the podcast. One reminder to everyone to ensure that you can be with us every time there's a new Pro Football Weekly podcast. You need to head over to iTunes and subscribe, and while you're over there, leave us a review and a rating. That would be really cool. Definitely much appreciated. And as I said, Greg Gabriel coming back on the podcast momentarily. He had a ton of interesting stuff when we taped this week's interview. He is working the phones like crazy. And I'm looking forward to bringing a few of the nuggets with you. A couple of the nuggets from Greg to you momentarily. I don't have the type of sources that Greg does. My phone doesn't ring anywhere near as often, but I have had a couple interesting calls over the past handful of days that kind of pertain mostly to the running backs. I did tweet it out earlier in the week, so I guess I'll share it with you here too. And let me just say flat out, ahead of my kind of sharing this thought from one random NFL executive, I don't necessarily agree with him. I really like Christian McCaffrey, and I think he would fit in a lot of offenses, but I will tell you that there is at least one team that's actually having a disagreement within their front office on the value of McCaffrey, on the NFL future of McCaffrey, and on the right fit for him. So I thought that was really interesting. This executive told me that it's about more than finding a bright offensive mind. You need to have a great quarterback, too, in order to maximize Christian McCaffrey and to help ensure that he gets the necessary spacing to succeed and to put his big playability on display. So I thought that was really interesting. This executive also said he doesn't think that McCaffrey is an NFL running back at all. He views him as strictly a slot receiver and a Reggie Bush type who's going to be limited at the next level. So once again, I don't necessarily agree with this, but it is one of the better nuggets that I've heard of late. This same guy also had some thoughts on Dalvin Cook. He said he has first round grades, obviously on Leonard Fournette, but also Dalvin Cook, and just on field production, also on Joe Mixon, but not on Christian McCaffrey. So interesting stuff there. And he did say that he could see the Packers, as Dalvin Cook is sliding a little bit right now because of some injury and off-field concerns with some teams. And this executive highlighted the Packers as a potential landing spot for Cook with the 29th overall pick. They will be looking for a running back at some point. So a few of my nuggets, once again, they certainly pale in comparison to the ones I'm about to bring you from Greg Gabriel. But hey, I like to share what I'm hearing as well. And One more big thank you to you for being with us on the PFW podcast. And a reminder to keep it locked in at profootballweekly.com all of draft weekend. We're going to be doing pick-by-pick analysis. We will be retweeting and sharing all the pertinent scouting reports as players hear their names called. There's going to be lots of fun stuff. I believe there's a couple Facebook Lives on the docket as well. So I know you're doing so already, but just make sure you're heading over to profootballweekly.com, and we are going to finish this draft process with a flourish. So without further ado, that is enough of my rambling. The Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide author, the 30-year former NFL scouting veteran Greg Gabriel, is up now on the podcast. And welcoming back into the program, Greg Gabriel, longtime NFL scout and, of course, the author of the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine. We trust our listeners have picked up their copies by now, but it's still not too late. Draft is tomorrow night, but you can get the PDF version and get up to speed in no time. So fortunately, either way, we're going to get you up to speed on some info here with Greg Gabriel. Thanks so much, Greg. Are you getting any sleep, and are your fingers getting any rest after all the rampant typing of the past week?
Well, my typing on an iPhone is hard. It's harder on your eyes, really, though, because you're looking at that small screen, and I've been tweeting out a lot of stuff as I get information, or the information that I want to give out, put it that way. It's an exciting time of the year, and I think this draft is just so much different than a lot of other drafts. You know, I talked recently to a general manager who's a good friend of mine, and, you know, he said when you look at the board, he goes, there's not a big difference between the second best player and the 15th best player. And he said, so he's thinking a lot of teams will be more need-oriented when they make their first-round selection, because there isn't that big drop-off as far as talent level when you're in that area. And then I think a lot of people around the league feel that the second round is really, really strong, and you're going to get some quality players in the second round. So, you know, trading back is not a bad thing, because depending on where you are in the first round, it could pick you up an extra second-round pick.
But let me ask, so I got a couple questions off that. There's some interesting stuff in there. First, does that mean the teams that are looking to trade up into the top five, A, it's because it's a quarterback league and they're looking for QBs, or B, is it because they're suckers and they don't get it that you're going to get similar value if you stay put? Well, how do you kind of reconcile that?
Well, they're looking for a specific player.
Yeah.
And they think that, I mean, that, no two boards are alike. So obviously this was this one general manager's take, and I tend to agree with him on that, that the drop-off isn't that huge. Yeah, it might be minuscule, but it's depending on position. I think, you know, if you look at the offensive line, that's a different story. There's just not a it's not a good offensive line draft. But when you look at a lot of the other positions, it's the drop-off isn't that good. But if a team is still eyeballing a certain player, they think that player is going to be a difference maker for them, could be the player that puts them over the top because of a positional need or whatever, then sure, they go ahead and make the trade.
Okay.
Whether it's a quarterback or somewhere else. You know, let's take Cleveland, for example. You know, there's been a lot of discussion in Cleveland in recent days, from what I understand, and who knows if it's actually factual, but from what I've been hearing from people in Cleveland is that most of the people in football operations want to take Myles Garrett, but in ownership, they want to make sure they get Trubisky, the quarterback. One of the reasons is that he's a local guy, and number two, they don't really have a bona fide quarterback on their roster. So, you know, they wrestle on that one back and forth, but when you look at the way their pick's set up, they got one and they got 12, and if they want to make sure they get Trubisky, they're going to have to move up from 12 in order to make that happen. And so, I think some of the teams between 2 and 5 could be the candidates to move down to that 12 spot, depending on where Cleveland thinks they have to go to get Trubisky.
We're chatting with Greg Gabriel, the excellent author of the 2017 Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine, and he's getting ready to dish on some awesome stuff he's been hearing around the league this week. You can find him on Twitter, too, at Greg Gabe, and I can't recommend enough giving that Twitter handle a follow because I've gotten smarter. I've learned a lot over the past 48 hours. So sticking with Cleveland for a minute, Greg, can we assume, do you think, that at least ownership and the football people and the coaching staff are in lockstep on Trubisky as their QB1, or do you think even that is up for debate?
No, I think that's the quarterback they want, okay. And so that's the guy they'll go with. It's the discussion has been to make sure we get him. Do we take him at one? And my opinion is that's ludicrous to do that because just as I said before, a little while ago, when you look at the draft board between 2 and say 15, 16, 17, you're getting the same level talent or pretty much the same level talent regardless of the position.
Right.
But at 1,
not at 1.
Myles Garrett is head and shoulders above anybody else in the draft.
Yeah.
And you can't say you're defeating the purpose of drafting if you say no to that pick, especially when they have a bounty of picks and they can easily move up from that number 12 position to be a position to get a quarterback.
Of course, yeah, that makes sense. And before I ask you if you have any experience with meddling owners, Greg, because you were in the NFL a long time, and I'm guessing that is what you'd loathe more than anything as an evaluator just trying to do your job. Before I go there, who else between 2 and 12 do you think is the biggest contenders or the biggest challengers for Trubisky's services that the Browns really need to concern themselves with?
Well, when you just look at the who has needs at the position, and you know, San Francisco at 2 has a needed quarterback. Chicago at 3 has a needed quarterback. Jacksonville is not picking up the fifth-year option on Blake Bortles. They have a needed quarterback. You know, you can go all the way down the line. Then they got teams like, you know, obviously Cleveland's got the need.
The Jets.
Buffalo's got a need. Tyrod Taylor may not be the answer or is not the answer. And you got teams like the New York Giants, the San Diego Chargers, the Arizona Cardinals. They all have a need to bring a young quarterback into the system because they've got an aging starter.
Yeah, it's amazing. So even between 2 and 12, though, we mentioned the Jets, too. So you're probably talking about half of those teams, which is pretty remarkable, and it does. I am not going to I will never condone an owner meddling, especially one with as blank a resume as Jimmy Haslam's on the football side of things. But I guess at least that sort of helps me understand why these are anxious times, if that's who they're sold on. Greg, 30 years of NFL scouting experience, and maybe you won't want to even single out an owner if there was one, but can you relate at all to what's going on for Sashi Brown, Paul DiTePesta, and Hugh Jackson right now?
Well, no, not really, because, I mean, I've spent the bulk of my career with two clubs, the New York Giants and the Chicago Bears, and the New York Giants, you couldn't ask for a better owner than Wellington Mara.
Right.
Wellington has died since I left there, but his oldest son, John, has taken over the leadership role. But the Maras were just super people to work for. And Wellington Mara used to sit in our meetings in February, and again in the meetings leading up to the draft, he just sat in the corner, never said a word, took everything in, took notes, but never once tried to say, no, we got to go in this direction. He let the football people make all the decisions, but he was in on those decisions so that he knew exactly what was going to happen.
Okay, gotcha.
And I think the same thing really with the McCaskies in Chicago. We let them know what the plan was, and they said, do what you think is best.
Okay, good. Well, that's I'm glad that you were in that position, obviously, because I can only imagine how frustrating it must be right now. Greg, there's a ton of stories right now. You did just mention the 49ers, and I'm pretty sure I saw this on Twitter, so I'm not letting any cats out of the bag unreasonably. Leonard Fournette, I'm pretty sure you spelled it out. That's what you're hearing. And you also said pretty clearly that you do not view the Niners, despite their huge need at the position, as a real viable candidate at number 2 to draft quarterback. Can you just explain these things?
Well, not at number 2. I think what San Francisco is doing was really trying to see if they could force the issue with Cleveland.
Okay.
And get Cleveland to either trade up to number two or possibly take the quarterback at number one, which would have Myles Garrett fall to them at number two, and they would take him in a heartbeat, regardless if they wanted the running back or not.
Right.
But, you know, I had heard in the last couple of days that that Fournette was really the guy that they wanted, and Shanahan was enamored with him. And then there was a national guy that had that before I put it out. There was a national guy that had it in a mock draft, I think on Monday night. So I wasn't the first one. I got the information on Monday night, but I wasn't the first one to put it out as far as being public knowledge. It was put, and I purposely didn't want to put it out. But, you know, once it got, I found out that it was out, then I tweeted it out myself.
Okay, interesting stuff. I should let our listeners know we are taping on Tuesday. This podcast will be finding your ears hopefully first thing Wednesday morning, just to give them an idea on timing. Greg, another one of the huge stories right now is about Garyon Conley of Ohio State. We talked about him a little bit, I believe, on last week's podcast. Now, we need to be very clear to point out he has not been arrested or charged with anything, but he is reportedly under investigation in a sexual assault incident that took place in Cleveland earlier this month. Can any team afford to spend a first-round pick on this kid with all the uncertainty looming? I believe I know the answer to that. And B, is this another thing you have any experience with? I know Lyle Collins 2 years ago in Dallas is kind of the closest comparison that a lot of people who follow the draft closely will remember.
I don't recall at any time there was an instance similar to this when I was working in the league. And yes, Lyle Collins is the one that's closest to it. That was 2 years ago, and really the time frame was the exact same, just a couple of days before the draft.
Right.
The news broke. I'm very close to Lyle Collins' agent, and he told me the whole story after the fact. This was, you know, after the whole thing was said and done. And Lyle was at the draft was in Chicago that year. It was the first time it was in Chicago.
Right.
And he left town, had to leave. Not that he had to leave town, but it was obviously the best thing for him to do. In his case, he was not charged with anything. All it was in his case was that the police wanted to question him because an old girlfriend was found murdered. And because there was a connection between him and the victim, the police wanted to talk to him. But just that slight connection took him out of the draft, and he went undrafted. And a lot of this has to be, I'll back up a little bit. Because of something like this and the severity of the case with Lyle Collins, the severity of the case with Garyon Conley, and unless the player is totally exonerated before the draft, I fully expect that he will go undrafted this coming weekend. And part of the reason is it's not going to be a general manager's or a head coach's decision anymore. It's going to fall in the hands of ownership, and ownership doesn't want to deal with the bad publicity, regardless of how good the player was. Lyle Collins was a bona fide mid-first-round talent 2 years ago, and he went undrafted, and I think the same thing just may well happen with Garyon Conley. It's unfortunate, especially if this turns out to be an untrue allegation against him. And I tweeted out just a little while ago, said if he's exonerated, if this proves to be untrue, he will never make up for the money he loses between the difference between being, say, a top 10 to top 15 first round pick versus a undrafted free agent. Regardless of how long he plays in the league, he'll never be able to make up for that money he's lost.
It is just remarkable, and right now, you know, we shouldn't say much more. Just that we're thinking about Conley's situation and the alleged victim, and we're curious to see how this is resolved. Obviously, but Greg, let me ask you. I know everyone wants to talk about the premium draft picks. That's all the sexy talk right now. But I'm curious, because you just said how rare of a situation this type of a talent to fall into the UDFA pool. What's it like in the first hours after the draft wraps up? And can you just spend a minute sharing what the rat race of working these phones and kind of lining up your UDFA priorities and how all that unfolds?
Well, the rat race actually in the UDFA market actually has already started. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, when I was with Chicago, we used to spend not quite half or just about half of our 30 visits on guys that we thought were UDFAs. Now, in every case and every year out there, the 9 years that I was here as scouting director, we drafted at least one of those players. And you bring him in, and part of the reason you bring him in is you want to get the medical on him, because you're not going to draft a player that you don't have a full medical exam on, and these guys were, in all cases, non-combine guys.
Sure.
And then the other reason for bringing him in, and there's teams that still do that, I know Green Bay is one of them, is that you want to recruit him, because after the draft, it's fast and furious, and most of these deals are done within an hour to 2 hours of the draft concluding. A lot of the free agent deals are done. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to recruit the player, and you've got to keep that recruitment going through the entire process. Now, obviously, this kid or these kids want to get drafted, and they're hoping they get drafted. And so your sell is, when you bring them in and when you call them up, you probably started calling them last week. You're going to call them again this week. You know, you call them today, you'll call them tomorrow, you call them Thursday, you call them Friday, and you call them Saturday. It's just, hey, I hope you get drafted. If you don't, we really want you. And you sell what the team has to offer, you know, what the depth chart is at the position, you know, hopefully what they're planning to do in the draft. You know, you never give total specifics, but you can give them generalities. And when you bring, part of the reason you bring him in also is to let him meet with the position coach. So now he's got some familiarity. Now, still it gets down to signing bonus at the end, but in the last 5 years or so, the playing field on the signing bonuses for the undrafted free agents is totally different than it was even since I've been in the league. Some teams used to spend as much as $200,000 to $250,000 of the rookie pool on the signing bonuses for the undrafted free agents, and there were some kids that got some huge money. Now there's a set limit with, mm-hmm. that every team has the set limit. I know the figure used to be $75,000. It changes every year. It might have gone up a little, but it's in that $75,000 to $80,000 range. That's your total pool that you can use for signing bonuses. And you know, if you want, you can use that amount on one player, or you can, you know, give 10 players $5,000 and some other players $2,500 or $300. But once you hit that $75,000 cap, you're done as far as offering a signing bonus. So it's pretty equal playing field, and so the recruiting then becomes that much more important, and that's what really goes on now. And then, you know, once you get into the day three of the draft, you start making these calls again to these kids and just saying, look, I hope you get drafted, but if you're not, you know, we want to sign you. And really in the beginning of the end of the sixth, beginning of the seventh round, you're really calling them again and trying to get a commitment from the player if, in fact, he doesn't get drafted. Now, it's happened with us where we've had some commitments in the past, and then the kid got drafted, and obviously, you know, that's good for him because the money's going to be that much more for a drafted player. But I think it's pretty much the same with a lot of these teams. You just got to work hard, and it's like recruiting kids to go to college. You know, the best recruiter wins because the money's pretty much the same.
Interesting stuff, and I want to ask you a couple more questions, Greg, and I'm curious about the Bills as well. You had another tweet earlier in the week, and I know you're from Buffalo, and you have a history with the Bills, I believe, but tell the listeners, you mentioned on Twitter that you thought, in not so many words, that Doug Whaley could be in trouble here sooner than later. It seems like forever ago, but it was only January when Doug Whaley led that ridiculous end of the season press conference where it seemed pretty clear that he wasn't having much control of the operation. Can you just tell us what you think is going on in Buffalo? Who is really pulling the strings there in this draft room, and what's going to become a Doug Whaley in short order?
Well, I don't know for sure what's going to happen to him, and I've known Doug a long time, and he's a good guy. He's an excellent evaluator, but in the role of general manager, he just hasn't performed the way you want a general manager to perform.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, and he said, you know, problems getting along with the head coaches. The ownership, I think, made a a change in philosophy. They brought in McDermott as the head coach, and he basically is the spokesman or the spokesperson for that team. Mm-hmm. And he's the final decision maker. And so he has all the clout right now. Now, whether Whaley makes it through next week, that remains to be seen. But it just, when you see a situation where, you know, he has lost clout, or whether it's Doug or anybody else in that position where they lose clout, you got to feel that the their days are numbered within that organization, and that McDermott's going to bring in a guy that he knows and he knows he can work with very well in that situation. And so I think that's what's probably going to happen. Is it going to happen? You know, we'll find that out next week.
Okay, interesting. And just so we're very clear here, so Sean McDermott has control of the 53 is what you're telling me. Not
well, as far as I know, he does. But I, you know, from everything I've gathered and people I talk to in and around the Bills organization, and this isn't something that, you know, I'm saying it. I mean, if you read the Buffalo papers, this is in the Buffalo papers every day.
Yeah.
So it's McDermott's in charge. Whether he has charge of the 53 in his contract, I don't know the answer to that. But it sure as hell looks like it from the outside looking in.
Right. Okay. All right. Interesting. I just find them to be one of the more, you know, kind of interesting, for lack of a better word, teams up there, because, again, it's a little unclear who may be calling the shots, and there has been a lot of interest with the top quarterbacks. They've got Tyrod Taylor.
Well, you know,
there,
we could back up a little bit. They had, their pre-draft press conference.
Yep.
Doug Whaley was not part of it.
Okay. All right. That would seem pretty telling. Yeah, no doubt about it. And let me mention, I like Sean McDermott a lot. I mean, I think he's been overdue for this opportunity, and I won't be at all surprised to see him succeed. So I thought it was a strong hire. I just I can't get that January news conference out of my head, and it sounds like there's a little bit of reasoning, or maybe the Pegulas, there's a little bit of agreement on that with me. So, Greg,
well,
let me
just ask, to add a little bit to that story.
Yep.
You know, last Friday, the Pegulas also own the hockey team.
Right.
And they fired the general manager and the head coach of the hockey team, and the hockey team has not done that well. And there seemed to be a little bit of dysfunction going on. And there's a lot of writers in the Buffalo media that feel that it was really because of the way McDermott has handled himself since he's been in Buffalo at the end of January, and the discipline and the leadership he has shown, that actually led to Mr. Pegula making the decision on the hockey franchise that he did.
Wow.
To bring in a different type of person.
Okay. All right. Thank you for adding a little more context. And we'll be following the Buffalo Bills closely come Thursday, along with all the other teams. Greg, just a couple more minutes to chat. Great stuff as always. You had a really good column on ProFootballWeekly.com Tuesday about sort of just assessing the legitimate first-round talents in this draft, and you came up with as many as 40. How rare is that? I mean, I know we've been saying it's a very deep draft, and round two could potentially be as good as round one in a lot of areas. But how unique is this relative to other drafts that you've worked or covered?
Well, just to correct you a little bit on that, I think there was 32 that I thought were legitimate first rounders, and then another
as many
eight
as
or nine
40.
That were borderline.
Okay. Yep. Thank
type
you.
Type guys, but really, I think when you go into most drafts, the number's more like 20.
Okay.
You know, 20 to, and then there's a drop off of talent, where this year's draft, I don't think, you know, go back to what I said earlier in our conversation, between 2 and 15, the talent level's about the same. I don't think you've got the top end talent in this draft. In other words, a top 5 or a top 6 or 7 players that you just have to have. They're mm-hmm. going to be difference makers in the league. I don't see that. You see a lot of very good players are going to be solid starters, going to help their teams win, and the talent level doesn't drop off. The whole first round is going to be guys like that. Yeah, after midway point of the first round, it might drop a little bit, but you're still going to see very solid players, and that's going to carry over into probably the first half of the second round. So what makes the draft very good and very interesting. You know, you might not get Hall of Famers in the top 5 or 10, but you're going to get real solid football players.
It's a great point, and I was going to ask you about that. I was actually a little afraid I was going to sound silly, so I'm glad you articulated the way you did. It was kind of what I was thinking. But let me take it a step further. Even if we just use last year's draft as our kind of measuring stick, there's no tackle as good as Laremy Tunsil. I'm guessing there's no D lineman as good as Joey Bosa or any corner as good as Jalen Ramsey. So is that kind of what you mean? Maybe not the same type of absolute star power, or am I wrong on those assessments? Do you think some?
Well, no, I think, you know, in the corner class, that could give you some argument there.
Okay.
And I think, I'd agree. In fact, when I did that article, like for interior defensive linemen, there's like one guy that jumps out, and that's Jonathan Allen. The right. next guy is Malik McDowell from Michigan State. The other guys, they're good players. They're going to help you win, but they're not difference makers.
Okay.
And, the problem with McDowell is that his physical numbers are outstanding, but his production numbers are very average. And, you know, he's not a consistent down-after-down player. So, you know, how high are you going to take him? And then when you look at Jonathan Allen, who I think is head and shoulders above all the rest of the interior defensive linemen, the shoulders come into play. And while he's been cleared, there's people I've talked to that say, we know we're going to get the first contract out of him, so it's 4 years, and if you pick up the fifth-year option, it's 5 years. What do we do with the second contract? Are we going to get to the second contract, or is it going to be, you know, there's going to be a problem with those shoulders? And nobody has the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not
mm-hmm.
going to have the answer for that for another 5 years to see how those shoulders physically hold up because of the arthritic situation. So. But I think when you look at certain positions, the corner position has been weakened, and now this Gary and Conley thing weakens it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And the injuries that we talked about last week, that hurts it as far as top-end depth. But when you look at the edge pass rushers, this is as good as edge pass rush group as you're going to see in any draft. And it's as good, if not better, than any – it's probably better than any tight end class you're ever going to see, and as good a running back class as you're ever going to see. So, you know, certain positions are very, very strong and very, very deep.
Where do you think the drop-off is going to be with the edge rushers, though? Because it sort of feels like there's some absolute studs, of course, but do you think it's a little top-heavy? Do you think there's a point in the draft somewhere in round two maybe where teams are going to say, okay, now is the time where we really have to pounce, or maybe not?
Well, I think it depends, you know, exactly, you know, who goes at other positions. Now, you've got a weak offensive line class, so if you want one, you got to grab them fairly quick.
Right.
And otherwise, there is going to be a drop-off on the offensive line. So with the edge guys, you know, I think you're going to find real legitimate players probably into the third round, unless a whole bunch go in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after you know, six or so go in the first round, if you have another five or six in the second round, then that could pretty much end the top line players. But I'm really thinking that at the beginning of the third round, if you're picking the top part of the third round, you can still get a pretty good one.
I think that's what makes this draft in a lot of ways so fascinating, is the way some premium positions seem to be so stocked, like pass rush and pass coverage, obviously at the corners and the safeties, and then what we talked about a couple weeks ago, and again, I did a terrible job trying to make my point, but just sort of the mismatch players, like the tight ends and the safeties, and in the way they appear to be in deep supply. Greg, just a few more minutes with you here, and thank you again. This is Greg Gabriel, the draft expert at Pro Football Weekly, and make sure you're following him on Twitter, @GregGabe. Any other things that have really kind of made you perk up on the phone over the past couple days and open your ears a little wider? Maybe a surprising name or a surprising target for a team? And if not, I'm just curious if there's one or two teams, Greg, that you find yourself very fascinated in, either out of, not able to predict what's going to happen, or maybe this year's version of, I don't know, the Falcons, like if they can add a couple really nice difference makers in the draft, it's going to maybe put them over the hump. Any of those type of teams that you're kind of honing in on?
Well, I think from a surprise aspect, you know, again, this is, it's all rumor. It's what people think, but it's, you know, people who are sitting in decision-making roles are telling me this stuff, and they're guessing as much as anybody else, but their jobs depend on their research. So they do a lot of research, and you know, I've sat in those seats before, so I know what type of research they do. But you know, going back to last night, and I'm hearing that Fournette may be the 49ers pick. That surprised me, you know, at the second pick in the draft. I also heard that the Jacksonville may, in fact, be taking a quarterback, that it's almost a slam dunk they take a quarterback at number four. That surprised me a little bit, because I've been thinking running back, you know, knowing Tom Coughlin's affinity for running backs when he was with the Giants. But, you know, they don't have a love affair with Blake Bortles. He is what he is, and they feel they got to get somebody else, and where they're picking, they can probably get that player. So I think those are the things that are surprising me the most right now. I think I keep hearing that Christian McCaffrey is going to be going in the top 10, probably to Carolina at 8. I think if we would have said that 5 weeks ago, you know, people might have laughed at us, but I think, you know, the more I talk to people, the more everybody says, no, this is a slam dunk. He's a top 10 player.
And it just shows, I probably shouldn't be saying this because I hope people will come back and listen. I know they'll come back and listen to you, Greg, but I'm going to show my you-know-what a little bit here. As far as the running backs go, I convinced myself that the Niners couldn't be interested in Fournette just because I've seen what Shanahan can do with mid-rounders like Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman. I'm thinking, no way they spend their first-ever pick, number two overall, on a running back, and now it sounds like that may happen. And then I just assume Christian McCaffrey has to be going to a spread-type offense that wants to, you know, do things horizontally as much as downhill. And Carolina's a total power backfield, is it not? So it's kind of funny how sometimes these things
but they play a lot out of the spread formation.
Yeah, you know, so they'll be able to space him still.
And I think if you listen to the Dave Gettleman's pre-draft presser, you know, and he kind of perked up when he started talking about McCaffrey more so than he was about any other player, and he probably didn't even know he was doing that. but at the same time, you know, when you look at a player like McCaffrey, he's not going to be a player that you're going to have sitting in the backfield and you're going to hand him the ball 25 times.
Right.
You know, he's got the skill set that they can use him in a lot of different ways, and part of that is going to be playing in the backfield. Part of it, he's going to be in the slot. Part of it, he's going to be split out wide, and the other is going to be as a return man. So where he might not get 25 carries a game, he's probably going to get 25 touches, but he won't get the same physical pounding because some of those touches are going to be as a receiver or a returner.
Yeah, it makes sense. I love the player, and I love the idea behind it. You know, obviously Cam Newton needs help off the season he's coming off of. So, Greg, that's all the time we have. I know you got to get back to the phones and hopefully getting some rest here in the last 24 or 48 hours until the true craziness begins. So thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun over the past 3-4 weeks getting to do this, and I hope you'll come back and be ready to review it all next week, because it seems like we're kind of getting on a roll, and we should keep it going, I hope.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. That is Greg Gabriel, the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide author and the longtime former NFL scout. Make sure you're checking out his stuff at Twitter, at Greg Gabe, and, of course, at ProFootballWeekly.com.
Did I tell you guys that Greg had good info today or what? Interesting stuff, definitely, on McCaffrey in Carolina, Fournette in the 49ers. The Jaguars thinking quarterback at 4. Lots of really, really good stuff in there from Greg. So one more big thank you to him, who's been so awesome over the past month helping us get ready for this draft. One more big thank you to our sponsor, Loot Crate. One more reminder that if you want to be in the know every time we record a new Pro Football Weekly podcast, and we're going to be doing so increasingly frequent as the offseason progresses, I hope. So you'll want to know every time one is available, and you can do so by heading over to iTunes and subscribing. We'd love it if you left a review, a comment, a like, a share, tell your family and friends. All these forms of interaction, definitely helpful for us. And lastly, just one more big thank you for being with us at Pro Football Weekly. We love providing draft coverage. We hope you have loved absorbing and digesting it, and we really look forward to going from previewing the draft to switching gears and reviewing everything this weekend and in the coming weeks and months. So keep it locked in at ProFootballWeekly.com. One more huge thank you. I hope you enjoy the draft and your team gets all of your top choices, but only if they're the best player on the board and there's no reaches, because if we've taught you anything, hopefully it's that over the past month or so. All right, guys, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week.